No one knows the Father except the Son and anyone to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. This verse articulates something that ended up being a bit of a challenge for the ancient church to figure out. The belief was that Jesus showed us God. Jesus shows us who God is. Jesus shows us what God's priorities are, what God's interests are. Jesus reveals the Father to us. That pretty much makes sense. People could get that. But why does Jesus have to show us the Father? Why does Jesus have to reveal who the Father is to us? Jesus has to do that because people don't see God. You don't perceive God. Jesus came in the flesh so that we could see and perceive God. That's where things got tricky. Perhaps the earliest, without a doubt, the earliest Christian heresy was Gnosticism. Gnosticism said that created matter is bad and invisible spirit is good, just like God is invisible spirit. Now, the problem with that is, but the Word became flesh. So created things must be kind of important. And Jesus left us his meal. So food, a created thing, must be kind of important. Created things must be important. And after all, don't the scriptures say that God made the world? So you have sort of two emphases. Later, much later, came to be called the imaged and the imageless, or the cataphatic and the apophatic, to use the technical terms. One school looked at creation like looking at an icon and seeing through the creation to the Holy Spirit at work and the Creator making the world and the Son redeeming the world. Another school chose to take away images until there was no picture and you just sat in the invisible presence of God. And there's nothing wrong with either school, but early on, those two ideas, those two approaches competed with each other. And Gnosticism got its back up about people saying, but God created the world, to such an extent that eventually the Gnostics said, no, God didn't create the world. The real God, the God Jesus showed us, lives up in the heavens and is pure spirit. And something else, something evil, created the world because creation is evil. And that's why Gnosticism gets named a heresy. So there's a balance to be had, a delicate balance. As some have said, Christianity is a very materialistic religion, and it is. Material counts for something. It matters. It's important, like sacraments. You can't have the sacrament of Holy Communion without bread and wine, without grain and grapes. Table manners depend on some things having been killed. But the challenge is to hold matter lightly and to recognize it's not all about the stuff, but it's all about the creator of the stuff. So here's what happens. Origen comes along, and he's a brilliant scholar. And Origen reminds people that God cannot be seen. The problem is that Origen talks about God not being able to be seen and God being spirit and all these other things around the same time as the Gnostics are running around saying the real God is pure spirit and didn't make the world and some evil other thing made the world and blah, blah, blah. And so pretty soon, Origen begins to be a controversial figure. I don't think he was a heretic or leaning towards Gnosticism or anything of the sort. But that's the way he was treated. Now, the problem is that Origen, because he understood how not using the image, how understanding God as spirit is attractive to some people, especially to ascetics, monks who go out into the desert to meditate in the silence and the emptiness. There are people who like emptiness. It speaks to their spirit. And that's a good thing. So Origen was much loved by the ascetic monks, and the urban bishops were like, I'm not so sure about this one. And so there was controversy. And the problem is that then we have Melania the Elder. She's wealthy. She could have all the stuff she wants to have. And yet she is drawn by the ascetic monks. She's drawn to their valuing of emptiness. And she learns from them to hold her wealth lightly. And so she gets tarred for a while with the brush of Origen by the urban bishops like Jerome, who says she's like, Melania, she's no good, she's never been any good, never will be any good. I mean, he just really doesn't like her. But it's caught up in that weirdness of the age. The truth is, Anglicans are not very good at being ascetical. We're not often ascetics. We have too much of a history of beautiful English country gardens in our blood. We like our flowers, and we like our lace, and we like our beautiful churches. And that's okay. When we hold those things lightly and let them point us to God who creates all beauty. Melania, the elder, she held her riches lightly. And she was able to build monasteries and convents and follow the monks around her whole life and do good and care for the poor because she held her stuff lightly. And she learned to hold her stuff lightly by the ascetical monks who were drawn to the emptiness, the stillness, the silence as their way to approach God. So I really like Melania the Elder because she teaches us how to value our stuff and use it for ministry, but hold it lightly like she learned from those ascetical monks. She's a good model for all of us. Creation is not bad. Stuff is not bad. Making stuff your God, that's bad. Holding your stuff lightly, enjoying it as pointing to the Creator, and being able to do good ministry with it, that's good. So today, we remember Ania the elder, who knew how to hold her stuff lightly.